There's been drama in Washington lately over the judiciary. Take the political fight over the vacant Supreme Court seat, or the president calling some in black robes so-called judges. All this has got movie critic Bob Mondello thinking about the judges he's seen in movies and how their depiction has intersected with public opinion through the years.
When a teenaged Mickey Rooney had a problem in the Andy Hardy movies, he turned to his on-screen dad, Judge Hardy.
I need $5.
What for?
Well, for things.
Now look, Andy, when you're earning your own money, you won't ever have to explain to anybody. Theoretically, that is. But when you're spending someone else's, it's only fair to the partner that's supplying it to know where it's going.
Gee, Pa, sometimes I wished you weren't a judge.
Why?
Because it's kind of taking advantage of a guy to keep showing him two sides of a question.
Two sides of a question. This was the 1930s, and the fact that Judge Hardy was a judge made him unassailable, thoughtful, wise, all-American rectitude made flesh. Somewhere along the way, in Hollywood at least, judges lost a bit of the rectitude.
A foul and depraved-looking lot, bailiff.
Those are just the spectators, Your Honor.
The farce What's Up, Doc? In 1972 featured a judge who'd adopted the rhythms of vaudeville.
What are these people being charged with?
They broke into my home.
That's breaking and entering.
And they brought her with them forcibly.
That's kidnapping.
They tried to molest me.
That's unbelievable.
Call him a precursor of sorts for the small town, accent-perplexed judge in My Cousin Vinny.
Did you say Utes?
Yeah, two Utes.
What is a Ute?
And they're both descendants of a comic tradition that goes back at least as far as the Marx Brothers, Groucho having picked up a gavel in Duck Soup, remember?
I suggest that we give them 10 years in Leavenworth or 11 years in Twelveworth.
I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll take 5 and 10 in Woolworth.
Being held generally in high esteem, judges, like anyone on a pedestal, become targets to be knocked down, which is another way of saying Hollywood's depiction of judges has been just as complicated as the public's perception of judges. Hollywood's version is easier to read, though, especially in terms of tone. When Groucho played a judge, no one thought he was mocking the judiciary. He was just being Groucho. Something slightly different is going on in, say, Miracle on 34th Street, when a judge caves
Your
to
Honor,
public opinion.
Every one of these letters is addressed to Santa Claus. The post office has delivered them.
Since the United States government declares this man to be Santa Claus, this court will not dispute it.
Still a joke, but this time it's a judge who's caving, not a comedian. And something far more judgmental is happening a few decades later in The People vs. Larry Flint, about the rabble-rousing publisher of the adult magazine Hustler. In that 1998 film, the producers gave the real Larry Flint a cameo as an appellate judge. He got to sentence himself, as it were, in a film where the whole point was that the judiciary kept getting First Amendment freedoms wrong. Often you can tell what filmmakers think of judges by looking at who they cast as judges. In Anatomy of a Murder, arguably the most riveting courtroom drama ever.
And now the last minute witness is being brought dramatically down the aisle. The whole thing has obviously been rigged.
The judge is played by real-life attorney Joseph N. Welch, famous off-screen for facing down Senator Joseph McCarthy during his communist witch hunts, with an impassioned, "Have you no sense of decency, sir?" But in Anatomy of a Murder, Welch was just a non-actor surrounded by seasoned pros, George C. Scott, Ben Gazzara, and increasingly desperate defense attorney, Jimmy Stewart.
That's like trying to take the core from an apple without breaking the skin. I beg the court to let me cut into the apple.
Our objection still stands, Your Honor.
Director Otto Preminger knew the way to give his non-actor a big moment here was to pause in what was becoming a rush to judgment. The judge flips open his pocket watch, winds it, and with great deliberation makes up his mind.
Objection overruled.
That pause encapsulated what judges are supposed to do, step back from the fray, look at things impartially, and render their considered judgment. Anatomy of a Murder came out at a time when the federal judiciary was respected as much as it has ever been. Not universally, mind you. Under Chief Justice Earl Warren, the Supreme Court had handed down a number of controversial decisions, including the one that outlawed racial segregation in public schools. That meant there were impeach Earl Warren signs on many lawns, but it also meant that the power of the judiciary to change society was on vivid display. Hollywood harnessed that power star in early 1960s courtroom dramas Inherit the Wind, To Kill a Mockingbird, and the classic Judgment at Nuremberg, where Spencer Tracy presides over a military court holding Nazis accountable for crimes against humanity.
This trial has shown that under a national crisis, even able and extraordinary men can delude themselves into the commission of crimes so vast and heinous that they beggar the imagination.
The accused are themselves judges, guilty, as Burt Lancaster's Judge Janning notes on the stand, of being swept up in a national hysteria.
There was a fever over the land. We had a democracy, yes, but it was torn by elements within. Only when you understand that can you understand what Hitler meant to us. He said, be proud to be German. There are devils among us, communists, liberals, Jews, gypsies.
It was the ancient story of the sacrificial lamb, says Janning, who goes on to explain how judges, who are sworn to protect society from barbarism, convince themselves that barbarism was the lesser of two evils.
Why did we take part? Because we loved our country. What difference does it make if a few political extremists lose their rights? The country is in danger.
Other movie judges have been swayed by love of country, or love of God, rather than insisting on the primacy of the law. In A Man for All Seasons, which was released that same decade, Sir Thomas More, an English philosopher now venerated as a saint, challenges both his king and his church, eventually losing his head for arguing that the law must be paramount.
What would you do? Cut a great road through the law to get after the devil?
Yes! I'd cut down every law in England to do that.
Oh? And when the last law was down and the devil turned round on you, where would you hide with the laws all being flat? This country is planted thick with laws from coast to coast, man's laws, not God's, and if you cut them down, do you really think you could stand upright in the winds that would blow then? I'd give the devil benefit of law for my own safety's sake.
The great Paul Scofield won an Oscar playing Moore. Not all movie magistrates live up to his standard, of course. Film genres require different approaches from, say, an action hero.
The DNA is a perfect match for Judge Joseph Dredd.
So long! I never broke the law! I am the law!
Or a cartoon like Roger Rabbit's nemesis Judge Doom.
When I kill you, brother, I talk! Yes!
But serious dramas still lean heavily on the probity and respectability of judges. In the movie Amistad, when Steven Spielberg needed someone to read the Supreme Court verdict that set a slave ship's passengers free, he called on a real Supreme Court justice, Harry Blackmun.
It is the court's judgment that the defendants are to be released from custody at once.
Judging judges is not in my brief, as it were, but in cinematic terms, I'd say this guy's judicial bearing looks a lot like the real thing. I'm Bob Mondello.